Almost got away from Demko and then tipped away before Nyquist could get a shot at it. And the Canucks are going to win the opening game of the series 4-2.
Caroline, Willie, D-Mays, 102.5, 106.3, The Game in the Game Nashville. App for streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. And we're broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Our studio today is the Hermitage Golf Course. We're live out here at the Stars Nashville Golf Tournament. Willie Donick joins us from Vancouver. And you just heard it right there. The Predators fall in game one, 4-2 to the Vancouver Canucks. The Predators, they struck first. Jason Zucker finds the net. The Vancouver Canucks respond, and the Predators respond themselves. And then, that first Vancouver goal is probably one that UC Soros could have stopped, one that UC Soros should have stopped. A muffin, to take Ryan O'Reilly's vocabulary word. But speaking of Ryan O'Reilly, he responds with a power play goal. The Predators go up 2-1 in a matter of 12 seconds. Everything unfolds. The Canucks score, and they score again 12 seconds later. And really, the Predators couldn't muster anything up from there. We're breaking it all down today. What we liked yesterday, what we didn't like yesterday, and, of course, what you took away. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We are to your phones early, and we are to your phones very often, because today is your day on a Predators playoff reaction Monday. But Willie D and D-Mace are here. Willie D, D-Mace, how we doing?
Hey, I'm doing wonderful. It's great. I feel great outside. Even though the Predators did lose, man, and I'm telling you, both of y'all, it was a struggle staying up last night.
I watched the last few minutes, kind of through my eyelids.
Man, that third period, I think I may have seen 5 minutes, if that, of the third period. I was trying my best to stay up. It's not over. This is not a one-game series. It's a seven-game series. And I think for the most part, up until, the first couple of minutes, you saw the juice from Vancouver. You saw the adrenaline. And it seemed like the Predators withstood it, especially UC Soros. He was getting pelted. But it seemed like to settle down, they got the first score. And it seemed like they were in the groove. And for whatever reason, that portion of the third, it just fell apart on them, and they were never able to regroup. But I still feel good about this team. Obviously, a few players have to play better. You talked about that first goal. I rewind that first goal, I think, about four or five times. I'm like, how did that get through?
How did he let that through?
Yeah, that was and I know it's just one of those times it happens, but man, oh man, in a game this closely contested, man, you can't. Those are basically gimme goals, and you can't give a team like Vancouver gimme goals. And I'm sure UC had to take that one back. He probably was pissed off at himself for allowing that first one in. But I think they regrouped after that, but that 12 seconds just sort of ended them in the third period. But I think beside that, I think they play good. They can play better. Individuals need to play better. But I'm not counting this team out based upon what I saw yesterday.
Well, guys, D-Mace, I think you're dead on with your initial reaction to the game there. And I commend everybody for staying up late and watching the game. And our mantra has to be, because we have no choice, sleep when the playoffs are over. Because
exactly.
I do get it. Had that game gone to overtime, you guys really would have been hurting here. Thank goodness our show doesn't start till 11. Or else, what were we talking about last week? The morning crew, that's a big challenge for them. Watching that.
I hope Robbie, Joe, and Nick are taking a nap as we speak.
Yeah, they deserve it for sure. I thought, D-Mace, you said it. Like, if Andrew Burnett could have had a script for a victory in game one, for the most part, it was unfolding, I think, exactly the way he wanted to, especially considering the team was rusty. I definitely think that the rust and the layoff was something they had to overcome. And I thought they did that. I think if they'd have gone into the locker room at the end of the first period scoreless, I think Andrew Burnett would have signed up for that before the game started. And they had the lead. And then, as you guys mentioned, they gave up a goal early in the second period on a little bit of an out-of-nowhere play. It wasn't a really big scoring chance. C-Mace, I thought, did a good job of breaking down the replay. Roman Josi, I think, I would say probably 8 out of 10 on a shot like that is going to block the shot. He's really good at it, getting the stick out there, stick on stick as the shot's coming and deflecting it up and out of play. He's really good at it, but on this one, he deflects it just ever so slightly, and it changed direction a little bit, which threw UC Saros off. But UC Saros is a good enough goaltender where that shot was far enough out that he probably still had time to adjust and handle that. He got caught in between, it looked like, and it snuck through. And so that was kind of a shocking goal. And yet the Predators still, by the end of the second period, I think had, they got the goal. They were getting Vancouver frustrated. Vancouver was taking penalties, undisciplined. And Nashville was maybe one goal away from taking full control of the game. And it went on into the third period, and then it just changed on a dime. It was incredibly shocking. But with a crowd like that and a really good team like the Canucks, you got to give them some credit. But Nashville missed a big opportunity to take game one, and they're going to have to try to regroup in game two tomorrow. But I feel like they're going to come in there today knowing that they have what it takes to beat the Canucks. I didn't think the Canucks would just overwhelm them in any sense. And I think the Predators feel like they could play better.
And I think that's the most frustrating thing, at least for me, from last night's game, is it was very much so within your grasp. And how massive of a swing would that have been? You go into Vancouver and take game one. Now, of course, you still have an opportunity to steal a game on the road on Tuesday. I feel like a lot of the reaction that I've heard, you know, on Robbie and Rex Road this morning, on Chase and Big Joe, a lot of the reaction that I've seen on Twitter is like true sky is falling. Like there are potentially six games left in this series. It's not just about one game. There's a very long series left here. So it's not, you know, do or die. The season is over just because you lost that game last night. But it was within your grasp that you had a lead going into the third period and you blew it. And it could come down to just a few mistakes, uncharacteristic mistakes that were the difference in the game, mistakes that Vancouver didn't make that you did. A big flub from Alexander Carrier that let the game leading goal, I'm not going to say winning goal, it wasn't the game winning goal, but the goal that Vancouver went up 3-2, that's just a mistake that Alexander Carrier made. And then a mistake from UC Saros where he let in a goal that traditional UC Saros, Superman UC Saros, just doesn't let in. So that's the frustrating thing for me, I believe, is that it was within your grasp and you weren't able to find a way to close it. But I'll ask you a question that I've been asking myself all morning long, and I think it's a more complicated question than it needs to be, and it's a very layered question that I don't think that has one specific answer. But Willie, I'll ask you first. Did the Predators play well last night?
I think they did some things very well. I think they defended well. I always, after every game, regular season or playoffs, like to look at the various sites that chart the scoring chances. And if you look at SportLogic, I think you would say the Predators played a very good defensive game. Vancouver, as we said leading up to the series, is a tremendous defensive team. They are very, very tough to get a lot of scoring chances on. So you have to match that. I would expect the series to be like this a lot, where it's not going to be easy to score. You may end up with some goals, but you're going to have to work for them, and you're going to have to be opportunistic. I didn't think the Predators played as in sync and as quick as they can when they are on. And I think some of that might have had to do with the layoff from Monday to Sunday. That didn't help. And so they're going to have to be quicker to get more offense, I think. The power play was 1-for-4. You could argue that one more power play goal might have been what it took to win that game last night. So did they play well? No, but I think they did some really good things. They're going to have to play better if they're going to beat the Canucks in the series. But I think they feel like they've got it in them.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's hard to try to, you know, because obviously they didn't play well enough to win.
Right.
But did they play well enough? I think they did some things that could have allowed them to win. And I think they did some things that frankly lost them the game. Mm-hmm. So did they play well? At times they did. And at times they didn't. I think that's how you can sum it up. It's when you don't win a game, and it's that closely contested, there are things that you do well. You go back at the film and you look at, and there are things that you need to get better at. I don't think you can just come out of it and say, especially after, you know, people who didn't watch the game and think, oh, they controlled the game because it was 4-2. No, you got to discount the open net goal. Discount that one. It was a tightly contested game. I think they played good. I think they played well enough to win at times and bad enough to lose. And ultimately, they ended up losing. That's
well,
the way
what,
I feel about
here's
it.
What, here's what Andrew Burnett said after the game, guys. And that I think this sums it up really well. He said, we did some things to put ourselves in position to win. And then in the third period, we made some mistakes that were uncharacteristic of the way we played down the stretch. And if you think about how well this team played from February 17th on, we all know the story, right? They went on the run. They were closing teams out in the third period. When they had a team down, they were able to put them away. And look, it was not going to be easy. There's a reason Vancouver won the Pacific Division and almost were the number one seed overall in the West. This is a really, really good team in an unbelievably fired up building, right? They had not hosted a playoff game since 2015, and you could tell because that place was going nuts. So, all that to be said, they had a couple of slip-ups, and it's amazing how one play or two plays can cost you a game. And, you know, the goal that ties the game, Andrew Burnett was saying, look, we had a coverage breakdown, whatever. But, look, in hockey, sometimes shots like that go in. You throw it through the traffic. Sometimes it finds the path. It tipped off of Hugh Suter, and it goes in. Okay, game's tied. Next shift after a goal. That is where they lost the game, right? They lost a battle. The momentum surged. They turned the puck over. And Alex Carey was like a nightmare. He's in the right spot, right? He's right in front of UC Soros. He's got his head on a swivel. He knows the guy's coming. But for some reason, the puck just kind of goes behind him. He can't figure out, do I get my stick over to deflect this puck? Do I stick my leg down and deflect it? And it just gets by him, and boom, that's the difference in the game there. So I think Andrew Burnett said it well. He said that, you know, these are things that were uncharacteristic of the way this team played down the stretch of the season. But that's hockey.
And we know, and we've said it several times, and I think coming off of that streak, it was something that Predators fans didn't necessarily want to hear, and that is the regular season and playoff hockey almost feel like two completely different games at times. That you can talk about momentum at the end of the season all you want, but at the end of the day, I mean, like, the playoffs are a different beast. So I did hear that clip from Andrew Burnett that you're referencing, Willie, and he said, look, the way that we played in these last 40 games, that third period basically just collapse is so uncharacteristic, and it's true that we have seen this Predators team really at times, the third period and late in the games has been their greatest asset, even if they do have a slow start. So that's another concern to me is that this team had almost a week of rest, and they still looked gassed in the third period. Adrian Bielesko pointed that out several times in the third period. It was like after the Canucks went up 3-2, it was like that was a nail in the balloon of, you know, of energy and excitement into this team, and it just completely fizzled out. So I know that we talked about the, you know, the rest versus rust conversation, and the Predators might come out a little bit rusty, but what I didn't expect was for basically the wheels to fall off late in the game, where I thought early in the game, although it wasn't a ton of action offensively, I thought that the Predators handled it well. I thought they came out not playing their best game, but playing good enough that they handled the environment, a crazy and loud environment. Billy, I'm sure you can attest to that way better than I can watching on TV, but it was a crazy and loud and probably intimidating environment that they handled pretty well.
Yeah, Willie, I think they did. Go ahead, Derek.
No, I was going to say, because I understand what Caroline is saying, but did they look tired toward the stretch? Because I understand the beginning of the game. I don't think it's about, you know, being tired or not. I think it's just about the adrenaline going and everything else. And typically the home team has the crowd behind them, so they're typically a little bit juiced up. But toward the end of the game or as the game goes, things tend to settle down and the players don't hear the crowd as much. But did they look gassed in your mind toward the end of the game or that third period?
I don't think they were physically gassed. I think it was more of a mental – I think they were mentally stunned And I think that crowd and the sudden turnaround with the crowd and the, you know, it was like when the Predators made the comebacks late in the season. We remember that comeback at home against Winnipeg, the comeback at home against Vegas, where the crowd just takes over and it energizes the home team, right? I don't think the Predators were gassed so much as the Canucks found another level, right? They were just all over the Predators, and the Predators were just a little too stunned, I think, mentally, and they couldn't get it, they couldn't gather it back up. But the net result was the same, that once the Canucks got the lead, Nashville wasn't able to come back with much, right? They didn't really mount a big push to tie the game. Like, they couldn't get a whole lot. And that's, again, where the Canucks have thrived all year. They are really good when they have the lead. That's what, again, is going to be the most frustrating thing that they're going to have to put behind them, is the best way to beat the Canucks is exactly the way the game unfolded. Get the lead, force the Canucks to come out of that defensive structure and have to take a few more chances, make them chase the game. And they had the opportunity to do that, and they let it get away. Once the Canucks got the lead, they were in their strong suit, and that was putting games away and have the crowd behind them.
And that's, I'm sure, what it probably kills them just as much as it kills us, is having it within your grasp and just letting it go. That you are off your A game, that you made just enough mistakes to let a game that you could have won just completely fall into your fingertips, and now you're staring at the wrong side of 1-0, at least early in this playoff series. But Andrew Burnett was also asked about, you know, just making sure this doesn't linger, making sure that the frustration of giving up a 2-1 lead in game one doesn't go into game two, that they do exactly what you just mentioned, Willie, shake it off, move forward, and move ahead to potentially taking game two. This was Andrew Burnett on moving forward after a loss like this.
I don't think so. I mean, I think this group's been resilient. We've handled adversity all year. I think to a man, we know we probably didn't play our best. But we've done a really good job of just moving straight ahead. Just forget about it, rinse it, and let's go back to work. It was a fun game. I think the emotions were high. It was physical. Had a lot of good, hard playoff games. We kind of relished in that. And like I said, we stepped on our toe a little bit. And, you know, give them credit. They were resilient, too. I mean, and they took advantage of some opportunities that self-inflicted a little bit on our side. But they played really hard. And I was really proud of our group, how we handled it early, and how we kind of started, in my mind, take the game over. And we just didn't finish the job. So lesson learned. It's a long series. And can't wait for the next game.
So you hear there from Andrew Burnett, look, we've been able to kind of, you know, slough things off a little bit and move ahead, move forward, don't worry about it, you know, be a goldfish. That's kind of been the characterization of this team. But we saw some uncharacteristic things from not just the team as a whole, but individuals. I mean, I don't think that Tommy Novak played his best game. I thought Alexander Carrier and Jeremy Lauzon made some uncharacteristic mistakes. I thought that Philip Forsberg was uncharacteristically a non-factor last night. Mm-hmm. So that's what you also need. It's not just, you know, moving forward after a loss. You're going to have to do that. That's the playoffs. But it's also, all right, we didn't have our best game. How are we going to regroup and move forward?
Well, I mean, they regroup and move forward by just, I believe, sticking to, obviously, you're going to make some adjustments. That's just the name of the game. You win, you figure, especially in a situation like this where the two teams are so closely contested. It's those who not only make the proper adjustments, but then that their team, after you make those adjustments, their team sort of sinks into what you're doing and sort of plays that way. It seemed like Vancouver made some adjustments last night. Not to say that the Predators didn't. It obviously it just didn't work. But I think this next game, you make your adjustments, but your marquee players, your dominant players have to play like that. They can't, you know, and I know how this sport, I know how professional sports is. Sometimes it's not your game, but in a series like this, they have to show up in all phases. Mm-hmm. You know, your marquee players have to show up in all phases in order for you to win a game like this, because it's so closely contested. And when they don't, this is what you see. games like this. So, you know, Philip Forsberg has to play better. UC has to play better. Novak, those guys that they depended on heavy during the season, they got to play better in the playoffs. There's no excuse for not playing better because you understand what's at stake.
I think one theme from last night was I think both teams liked how they handled the other team's star players. I thought the Predators, for example, did a very good job on Quinn Hughes. And I thought JT Miller played a really good game for them, but Nashville was able to handle him for the most part. I think he's going to be a force throughout the playoffs, but I think I will take what happened there. But on the other hand, I think Vancouver had an excellent plan to how to slow down Roman Josi, Philip Forsberg, and the first line, right, the big four. And you kind of knew that when you drew Vancouver, they had the ability to do that, right? They're a tremendous defensive team that can really shut down opposing teams' top lines. So for example, Vancouver, they dominated Edmonton throughout the year. And they could take McDavid and Draisaitl and hold them down. That's how good they are defensively. So it's going to be a lot for Forsberg and those guys to get theirs. They're going to have to work for it. And I did think Philip Forsberg was down a gear. He didn't quite have that shot dialed in. He had a few looks, right, where he either missed the net or the shot was just not quite what he's capable of doing. And they're going to need the best Philip Forsberg before the series is over. I thought Roman Josi had some moments where you started getting him going in the offensive zone where he's driving in, he's making the defense break down, but not as many as he has when he's maybe at his best. So they're going to have to see if they can find ways to get more from their top guys.
And if they can't, five on five,
I'll specify, yeah. Right? The power play had its looks, for sure. But the 5-on-5, they need to find a way to get a little bit more.
And that's a whole different problem that we need to talk about.
Yep, and we will continue to get into that. And that's what I want to get into coming up next. We didn't see the Philip Forsberg that we've grown accustomed to throughout the season. We didn't see the UC Saros standing on his head, absolute Superman Saros that we have grown accustomed to, at least in the latter half of the season and over the past couple of years with UC Saros and the Nashville Predators. It just seemed like the guys that you needed production from, the guys that you were going to have to rely on throughout the playoffs, they didn't give you your A game last night. What's the concern level there? We'll get into that coming up next. And, of course, we are right to your phones as well. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace. We're brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet.
The two goalies. If they play well, whoever plays well, then that's the team that's going to win. Or is it more than that when it comes to these two teams?
Well, I mean, Derek, I think the base answer is the goaltending is your number one thing.
Mm-hmm.
In a seven-game series, if you don't have goaltending, you're not going to win. And there are teams that believe you don't need to pay the most for a goalie, and you pay goalies too much. But I believe this: there's a tier of about five or six guys that are better than everybody else. And if you've got them, you do what you can to keep them. And this series features two of those guys. I think that Saros is on an elite tier, and I think that Demko is on an elite tier as well. And so, look, if you don't have goaltending at this time of the year, you're doomed. Nothing can overcome that. I think that to win in this league, you've got to have goaltending number one. You've got to have a good mobile defense, number two. You've got to be strong down the middle. You've got to have elite talent, and you've got to have depth. But you can have a good mobile defense. You can be strong down the middle. You can have elite talent, and you can have depth. But if your goaltender picks a week that he's suddenly off his game or isn't very good, you're screwed. So goaltending is number one above everything.
That was Elliot Friedman on our show last week, and he said, look, it's very closely compared team. You've got two Vezina caliber goaltenders, and you need both of them to be on their game. Caroline Billy DeMace, we're live out here at Hermitage Golf Course for the Stars Nashville Golf Tournament. And Willie Donick, we have a very angry Erin Donick standing
right here
because she's been trying to say hello for you to you for the last couple of minutes, and you haven't even looked up to see that Erin is waving hello to you.
I was looking up very important stats on my computer, and so my screen was locked. I did not see you guys. Now I can
we're waving that. Like right. Mad people over here, and Willie, you just staring at the screen.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, now she's got to go take care of business. Yep. You missed your opportunity. Oh,
she's good. She moves fast. She moves fast.
She does. Both of you locked over there. Well, anyways, that was Elliot Freeman talking about, I think, what we already knew. And one thing that we had mentioned a couple of times last week is you can't afford very many days for your A's, your aces, your varsity players, so to speak, to have an off day. We saw that from Philip Forsberg yesterday. He did not have a very good day. And you could make an argument that UC Soros didn't have a great day yesterday either. It wasn't horrible. It wasn't terrible. And UC Soros absolutely made some saves that UC Soros needs to make. And then he's going to have to continue to make throughout the series if you want it to be an interesting series. But it wasn't UC Soros' sharpest day. So I'll open up the question to you both. What's the concern level for the UC Soros, the Philip Forsberg, even all the throw Gus Nyquist in there, the day that we didn't see from those kind of players that you're going to need to see and you're going to need to have if you're going to make this series interesting?
Well, I think UC Soros would be the first to tell you he thinks he can play better than he did. The concern level in any playoff game or series has to be high, right? I don't think it changes. If you look at UC Soros' season, there were probably more games like that than there have been in the past for him, where you come away going, it could have been better. It wasn't bad, but in a low-scoring game, and I do think he made a lot of big saves. I'll give you a stretch of the game in the second period where I thought Vancouver really pushed. They probably got their best sustained attack of the whole night. And he kept them off the scoreboard. I thought he really played well in that stretch and also early in the third. And then there was that blip, that 12 seconds, where I don't know if you put either one of those goals really on Soros. The first one is the one that I'm sure probably stings as much as anything. But I think at the end of the night, Nashville feels like they defended well and defended well enough to win. And I think if the goaltending is a little bit better, then maybe that game sneaks to overtime. But that's the job of a goalie, right? And they're not going to say Soros has to be better. You'll never hear anything like that for him. But I think as Soros evaluates himself, I think he knows he can be better. And I think you would say the same thing of Roman Josi, of Philip Forsberg, and the guys who get you there, the star players, they would all tell you they have a little bit more in them. They need to be better than they were last night if they're going to win this series.
And Roman Josi had that one shot that just barely missed and hit off the crossbar. Yeah. Oh. If that goes in, if that's an inch a little bit further to the right, then we're talking about a completely different ballgame here.
Oh, yeah, because was that in the first period or second period?
That was in the second period. And the other one that really sticks out to me was the one right at the beginning of the game, Luke Evangelista. By the way, I thought Evangelista handled the moment very well. I thought he played a good game.
I would agree.
For a kid who has never played in the playoffs before, he looked comfortable. He did not look out of place at all. He deals a perfect pass over to Anthony Beauvillier. It's in the net. That's a goal. And Demko makes a great save. If you're going to nitpick a little bit, Beauvillier wasn't able to really elevate the puck. If he does, there's nothing Demko can do about it. But Demko, who's a big guy, and that's the weakness of Demko. Of course, both of these goalies, right, as great as they both are, they both have things that the other team is really honed in on. They're going to look at all of your strengths and weaknesses, and they're going to try to exploit what you do give up. No goalie's perfect. Demko's thing is he's so big. If you can get him to laterally move like that, that's where you can get him. And they had him. They executed the scouting report perfectly, and Demko made a great save. Soros, because he's not as tall as most goalies, right? He's, as we talked about, the Mookie Betts of the NHL, right? Overcomes the fact that he's undersized. traffic and screens are the thing that Vancouver's trying to exploit, and that's how they got the tying goal. But that could happen to anybody, but there's a little bit more space on Saros for plays like that. So all that to say, opportunities and game of inches. You know, if Yossi's rocket goes in instead of ringing off the crossbar, or if Beauvillier can finish that great chance, it's a different game. But this is hockey, right? This is it's woulda, coulda, shoulda, and tomorrow will be a new game. You put it all behind you and try it again.
Well, yeah, but I think Philip Forsberg has to play extremely well this next game. This is what I mean by the adjustments. Coach Bruno goes in and figure out how to sort of get this whatever coverage or how they're playing Philip Forsberg to try to figure it out. Because if he doesn't figure it out, it's going to be hard for the Predators to win hockey games. If they don't figure it out, then UC has to step up his game and become a menace in the net. If they don't figure it out, then other guys have to like drastically pick up their game. So to me, I want to see, I would love to see how they combat, you know, how Vancouver is paying attention to Philip Forsberg, because they understand if we get him off his game, then that could be a trickle down effect to everybody else. So the adjustment needs to be, how do we get Philip Forsberg, you know, more into, do we take him off the puck? Mm-hmm. What do we do to get him more involved in the game and become, you know, what he was during the season for us?
And look, Philip Forsberg's going to get a lot of attention.
Oh, absolutely.
Because he's Philip Forsberg. But it's, what does he do to still be a factor, mm-hmm. even when he's getting all of the attention that he's going to get?
Yeah, to you know, there's great responsibility when you mm-hmm. when you're that good, right? Mm-hmm. The other team is going to put their best players on you. You're playing an elite defensive team mm-hmm. that is going to focus so much on trying to neutralize them. And round one goes to the Canucks in terms of, did they neutralize that line 5-on-5? Absolutely they did. They absolutely neutralized Forsberg, O'Reilly, and Nyquist at 5-on-5. So how do they overcome it? How can they get better looks? Like, I don't think Philip Forsberg's the kind of competitor to say, oh, they're gonna take me away, so other guys, you guys got to step up. Like, I think he's going to put it on himself. Now, on the power play, that's mm-hmm. where you can make up for it, right? And that's where they did have some success. Most of the success they had was on the power play. O'Reilly got the goal. Those count, right? So they were a positive factor there. And I think there's even more that they can get off of that. And I think in Nashville, where they have the last change and you can match up a little easier, it will be easier for them to get some positive looks 5-on-5. It's going to be a big challenge in Vancouver, where Rick Tocchet has the last change. So anytime he sees O'Reilly's line out there, he can put his best defensive line out there to try to neutralize it. And they got the job done last night.
And that's going to happen. They're going to try it when it's Ryan O'Reilly and Philip Forsberg and Gus Nyquist and the guys that have largely carried this team for the entirety of the season. That's going to be their game plan. Tocchet's a good coach, but I don't think you need to be that great of a coach to understand that that should be your game plan. But overall, you know, two guys that I think stood out to me the most, and it wasn't just on these two, but mm-hmm. these are your superstars, and that's going to get the most of the attention, UC Saros and Philip Forsberg. I think we can put Tommy Novak into the conversation. We think we can put Alexander Carrier into the conversation of players that you need more from, of players that just made too many mistakes mm-hmm. or just didn't give you enough that you need to win a playoff game. But two narratives that I've seen kind of come out from last night, I'll start with the UC Saros narrative, is all of these Predators fans absolutely terrified of, what is it, UC Saros is what, 3-8 in the playoffs now? Mm-hmm. Now Predators fans, I believe, and I know that I could be talking about a vocal minority on Twitter, on social media, in the text line, there have been so many Predators fans that have just convinced themselves that UC Saros can't get the job done in the playoffs. And look, maybe he can't, but I'm not willing to make that evaluation right now based off of last night or what he did in the bubble series. I don't think that's fair, and I don't think that's a fair enough sample size to say, oh, UC Saros, who's been a Vezina-caliber goaltender from the majority of his tenure in Nashville, just can't get the job done in the playoffs with as small of a sample size as we have.
Yeah, I think it's too small of a sample size, but I understand. I can understand, you know, what some of the fans, and I'm sure it's not a majority of the fans, but I can understand some of the fans. Hell, we had somebody call, what was it, last week, and didn't even trust Sarles before the playoffs started. You know, we need a bigger goalie in the goal. He's too small.
To be fair, that did rear its ugly head yesterday.
And I get it. I understand.
I don't know what kind of crystal ball that caller had.
Yeah,
but
to me, it's not, you know, some people are going to have their, you know, their uneasiness about it entering in the playoffs, and I'm sure those same people have that same feeling after the game. Mm-hmm. But my thing is, I trust UC Sarles. I think the guys, if you play better in front of them, you know, he would be a better goalie. But there was a point in that game where he played like a Vezina goalie. Mm-hmm. I mean, he, especially that first period, I mean, they were hitting him. Goals that he was saving were top-level goalie stops. Now,
I saw a top-level goalie Demko stop yesterday.
Yeah,
that was a Vezina save.
Both of those guys were playing extremely well in periods. I get it. But I'm not worried about UC Sarles. Now, if this continues, say they come out tomorrow and he is sort of having trouble, then, you know, maybe that's something you have to think about as a head coach. Not to the point of, okay, we need to change goalies. But, hey, what else do we need to do around our goalie? What aren't we doing around our goalie? Because now, you know, you're going against the best of the best. Mm-hmm. You're not playing, you know, Colorado one deck game and then playing the worst team in the NHL the next game. Each game you play is against top-tier competition. Mm-hmm. So you got to find out ways to help your goalie. Yes, he's great, but you in this sort of environment, you got to find ways to help him.
Let's take the 3-8 because I do think that that's the stat that's going to get thrown out there. And
yeah,
look, this is the microscope that goalies are under, right? This is what it's about, and you put that up. You stack that on top of the fact that this summer is going to be a very important summer in the what's the next contract for UC Sarles going to look like. Mm-hmm. This will all be part of the evaluation. How do you do in the postseason? So let's break down the 3-8. Yesterday, to me, is the by far the most important playoff series that he's played because to me these teams are closer to even. This is an underdog Predator team, but I don't think they are overmatched by this Vancouver team. This Vancouver team is excellent. I think I think a lot of the fans are looking at Vancouver like, whew, they didn't get Dallas, they didn't get Edmonton, they can beat Vancouver, and I think that's true. But let's not undersell how good Vancouver is. They're really, really good. They had a great, great season. I think the first playoff series that Sarles played was 2020 against the Coyotes. That was in the bubble where the team hadn't played for, 2 months, however long the shutdown was. He goes out there. He did not play well in that series. The team didn't play well. They should have won that series against the Coyotes. It just wasn't meant to be. I don't know what was going on with that, but Sarles didn't play great in that one. The series against the Hurricanes, which is the only other series he's really played, I thought he played really well in that series. But that Predator team was pretty overmatched, I think, when you get down to it, man for man, against the Hurricanes. They did well to get that series to 6 games. The last 4 games went to overtime, but it took UC Sarles playing out of his mind, I think, to help get that series. There was so much pressure on him in that. I thought he played well in that series. So his record in that series is 2-4, but I don't think that indicated how well he played in that series. So that's his playoff history. That's it. It's not a big history. Pecorine lost a few rounds before he ever won a playoff series. So, you know, I'd say let's let it play out a little bit more before we put that tag on.
Let's get right into your phones on the Predators coming up next. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. Predators fall to the Canucks in game 1, 4-2. What is your concern level about this team moving forward as game 2 comes up tomorrow evening? Another 9 o'clock puck drop, so drink your coffee. Right into your phones coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace. 1025, 1063 the game. Caroline, Willie, D. Mays. We're live out here at Hermitage Golf Course for the Stars Nashville Golf Tournament. Predators fall to the Vancouver Canucks in Game 1 of Round 1 of the Stanley Cup Playoffs, 4-2. And we are right to your phones and your reaction. Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025 is the phone number if you want to get in on the conversation. Taking your calls and your texts. One texter texts in, says, what a short memory people have. We would not be where we are without Saros. Have you all watched all the games in this stretch? He's been a dominant goalkeeper. I'll even add the short memory that I feel like some people might have about Philip Forsberg. A lot of the reaction that I heard last night, at least on social media, so of course take that with a grain of salt, is, there we go, right back to old, you know, streaky Forsberg. And it's like, okay, calm down. Forsberg has been incredibly consistent all season long. He didn't have a great game last night. I'm not willing to go back to, oh, there it is, contract year Forsberg yet again. I cannot go there yet. I'm not going to overreact to just one game. As frustrating as it is how the Predators had an opportunity to win that one, I can't go there after one game.
This is what the playoffs are all about, though. You think the world is going to end when you lose a game. and when you win, it's the best feeling. We're going to roll. We're going to roll over them. You know, but neither is true. This is where Barry Trotz talks a lot about the serial winners. And I was thinking a lot about that last night. I really thought that O'Reilly and Shen and Zucker and some of the guys that have played in a lot of playoff games, I thought they looked very comfortable for the most part. Not all of them played their greatest game ever, but they looked like the moment wasn't too big. That was a hostile atmosphere. They played well. But you are going to be judged differently in the playoffs than you are during the regular season. All of those guys know that. What they have to hope for, I was really excited to watch McDonough last night too. He's played in more playoff games than any of those guys. And man, he was awesome. He was at another level last night too. I thought he was really good. But this is a big part. If you're going to make a playoff run, you've got to come back and have answers after your team loses a tough game. And it starts with the top guys. You guys have made this point subtly a few times. I thought Tommy Novak was a guy that looked like the moment was too big for him last night. Now, that was his first ever playoff game. What do? They switched a couple of guys around during the game to try to give him some support. But there was no question that with the matchups, the Canucks tried to exploit Novak in the defensive end. And we knew that was going to be the case going in. It'll be easier for Novak at home when they can set him up in better situations in the offensive zone. That's where he does his work. But he's going to have to hold his own in the defensive end. So that's a story to keep your eye on. The depth of the Canucks was big because that third line, Dakota Joshua, who a lot of Predator fans probably have never heard of, until last night, he's the player of the game, right? He's the number one star. He has a great game, and they win. But that third line that they have, Elias Lindholm, they traded for during the regular season, and then a guy named Connor Garland, who was another not a household name but a really good player, that line was the difference in the game last night. All the top stars, in my mind, kind of canceled each other's out in a lot of ways. So what happens in Chapter 2? It's a brand new game. As Barry Trotz says a lot, there's really no momentum from game to game. So you'll start over, you adjust, and see what goes from there. But at the end of a seven-game series, you need Philip Forsberg to have some good games in there, right? If he doesn't do well or if Saros doesn't do well, you are going to be judged by how you do or perform or don't perform in the playoffs.
And if Forsberg doesn't play well, I don't think you get to seven games, unfortunately.
No, you don't.
You're hard-pressed to see that.
Yeah,
if he's not playing well, I don't think you get to seven games. And in regards to, you know, the momentum, I mean, this team, obviously, you figure, you look at Vancouver and how they finished the game, you figure, okay, there's some momentum. Well, there can be momentum from game to game. You just got to shut it down early as a team. And best believe the Vancouver crowd, fans, they're going to be even louder this go-around than they were the first game because their thing is, let's make it loud. We want to go back to Nashville up 2-0. We don't want to go back 1-1. So how do the Predators then stop whatever momentum they did have from the previous game? Because they feel confident now. Vancouver Canucks, they feel confident. And they feel confident in their goalie. Mm-hmm. So if they can stop, if they can play or stop Vancouver from doing what they did the first couple of minutes, because they were all over the Predators that first, 5 minutes or so around there. If the Predators can stop that, then have a better shot at getting the game they want to play. Willie brought it up. When you score early, you take Vancouver out of what they really want to do. They want to be a defensive team. They want to, you know, hit you up the boards. That's what they were doing to Tommy Novak. They were being physical with them. Yeah, they were being physical with them. So the quicker you can score, the quicker it brings them sort of out of that sort of defense they want to play or that game they want to play.
The momentum shift. I mean, yeah. We saw it last night. It was palpable. Mm-hmm. As soon as Vancouver went up 3-2 and they scored two goals in 12 seconds, all of the momentum was in Vancouver's corner. That's how quick it changes. 12 seconds. That's all it took.
No question. That is really, to me, Caroline, the point of the game. The lesson that needs to be learned is how quick the game can change. Mm-hmm. If you just let your guard down for a moment. And that's really all they did. I thought they played a solid game. They did a lot of good things. As we were saying at the beginning, as we try to end on an optimistic note here, they put themselves in position to win the game nearing the halfway point of the third period. And it wasn't perfect, but they had answers for a lot of what the Canucks threw at them. And they were, you could argue, and Andrew Brunette said this as much, he says, we were close to taking over that game. That would be a huge feather in their cap. And you could feel that. That team did not feel like they were just fighting to stay in the game. And I've seen a lot of Predators in the teams in the playoffs, especially on the road, some of the early Barry Trotz teams, some of the John Hines' teams, where you're thinking, gosh, they're just trying to hang on. They're just trying to stay in this thing somehow. How are they ever going to win a game on the road? I didn't feel like that last night. But they had the letdown for the 12 seconds. So I think that's what they have to try to look at today. When they gather and they go back through it all, okay, we got some adjustments to make. It's a physical game. Yeah, here's what they're trying to do to Novak and his line. Here's what they're doing to Forsberg's line. How do we adjust? But let's take a look at some of the good things that we did too, because if we do these things again, we're going to put ourselves in position to win a road game on Tuesday, and you'll take a split going back to Nashville.
And that is something that I think that you can live with talking about after game one. But game two, if you continue to make those mistakes again and you let a game that you had within your grasp get away from you, that quote-unquote, you know, we almost had it, we could have won it, we did some great things, that narrative starts to get a little bit stale. Because think about how different this series will feel if the Predators steal a game on Tuesday, come back to Bridgestone Arena with the series tied, versus now you're down two, you need to win both games at home and your backs are up against the wall. I think that, you know, we were close and we did some good things. I think that's a fair conversation to have now, but you're going to have to do these things and you're going to have to see those things come to fruition on Tuesday.
Agreed.
All right, coming up next, we're going to transition quickly into some NFL draft thoughts. We are just a few days away from the NFL draft. Teron Davenport will join us at 1 p.m. So we'll get TD's thoughts on what he's hearing, some gossip during smokescreen season. Last few days of smokescreen season. Mm-hmm. Sad to see it go. So one thing that TD mentioned on the TD Power Hour on Jared's show on Thursday, something that the Titans want to do. Are we buying it? Do we like it? Do we not like it? We'll get into that coming up next. We'll get right into your Predators thoughts next hour as well. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 1025, 1063 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.